Good morning. Welcome to the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee meeting. The first item on the agenda this morning will be appointment of a chair. Can I have a nomination for a chair, please? Yes.
Thank you very much. I nominate Councillor Kelly Parry.
Can I have a seconder for Kelly?
Seconded.
Thank you. Any other nominations? On that, Kelly will be appointed chair. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the first Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee of this council term, and thanks for electing me as chair. Move on to apologies.
Apologies from Councillor Hardy and Councillor Munro.
Thank you. And the order of business.
The order of business as set out in the agenda, with a variation for 5.10 to be taken after 5.5, if this is agreed.
Is there any objections or otherwise minded? No. Nope. In that case, we'll accept that. Declarations of interest. Members should declare any financial or non-financial interests. They have an items of business for consideration. They can either do that now or at any point in the meeting. There is no minutes of the previous meeting to be considered at this meeting, and we'll move on to public reports. First being 5.1 membership in terms of reference, and the Director of Resources report.
Thank you. I'll introduce that report, Chair. This report simply brings the committee's attention to its membership and terms of reference. Terms of reference include both the performance review and scrutiny aspects. And also there are details in the report, starting at the bottom of page 6, about the call-in procedure in relation to Cabinet. And the recommendation simply is the committee is invited to note its membership in terms of reference.
Councillor Johnson.
Thank you very much. This really was an excellent report, and I offer my congratulations to everyone involved. And it has been a very difficult time for everyone involved up in New Byres. And so thank you to everyone for staying with the improvement programme. And I'm sure it will continue into the new year.
Sorry,
Sorry,
Councillor Johnson. We're just on the... not quite moved on to item 5.2 yet. If everybody's happy to note the recommendations of 5.1, we'll move on to 5.2, however. Moving on to item 5.2, inspection of New Byres Village Care Home report by Joint Director of Health and Social Care.
Thanks, Chair. So I'll be speaking to this for those who don't know me, I think I know most people around the table. Alistair Short, Head of Primary Care and Older People Services within Health and Social Care. So in front of you, you have the report, as the covering report, as well as the formal report from the Care Inspectorate into the review of care services within New Byres Village Care Home. There was an unannounced visit earlier this year in January, and this was very much a kind of follow-up to recent inspection reports, which some members were aware of was a less than positive report that we've had in relation to New Byres. There's a lot of work going in to do the restructuring in terms of staffing, and probably crucially was also the introduction of nurses into the care home, which has been incredibly helpful. So the care inspector came in. For those who are aware, just 2.2 sets out what the role of the care inspector is, and very much providing a kind of independent review and scrutiny around services in relation to care. So 2.3 really sets out the key feedback that we received, which noted that the grade fours, which in care inspector terms is a good, the grades range from 1 to 6, that quality of care and support, the quality environment, quality staffing and the management and leadership were all graded four. The team specifically setting out 2.4 there acknowledged the introduction of the nurses was a huge benefit, that the effective use of care plans, bedrooms being comfortable and personalised, though noting some further work to be done in relation to that. I suppose the bit that I would want to highlight the most was the perception and the evidence view around the change in culture within the home and the real attitude, a kind of positive attitude and approach of the staff. Hugely positive in relation to the new staff team that's in there and how the restructuring had happened. And there's certainly been some subsequent meetings that's been held with staff within new buyers and also with families within new buyers. And we've seen a huge change in the willingness from families to get actively involved. There's been working towards establishing a friends of new buyers, and that's particularly for families whose loved ones have passed away within the care of new buyers. And I think that's a huge testimony to the work that the new manager and his management team, as well as all the staff, have done in getting us to that place that was a very difficult place for new buyers previously. As ever, it was the ratings were good, so there's still further work to be done, improvements to be done. No, the care room has come a long way. Areas for development was around kind of food and fluid intake, oral charts, and the stuff and issues around medication. Obviously, the support was dated back in January, and so there's been significant work done between now and then to address those concerns. And as well as kind of ensuring that we have the staff in place. The check this morning, so the occupancy at new buyers at 96.6%. There's 61 beds, one respite bed, 60 kind of residential beds. And of late, we have been sitting at 100% occupancy, which is a huge testimony to the staff. But also what we're now seeing is a developing waiting list around new buyers as a result of people actually really beginning to see and evidence the changes that were made there. So really just noting that the good progress has been made, and it's the first time that grade fours have been consistently received in new buyers since it opened, so we wouldn't want to lose sight of that as well. So I think still further work to be done, but huge positives to build on.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson.
Everything I said before, and I really endorse it, and I'm sorry, I should have been paying far more attention than I was. I did make an impromptu visit up there, and I was really impressed by what I saw and how people were interacting, members of staff, patients and relatives. Don't call them patients, sorry, I think call them residents. But yeah, I wholeheartedly agree that we acknowledge the continued improvement and say we accept the recommendation. Thank you.
Thanks. Councillor Russell.
Thank you, Chair. Just to advise members that on the back of various reports we had for new buyers, the local authority set up a subcommittee that met very regularly. It's not mentioned in this report as such, but there was a lot of work done by that subcommittee, obviously with local members and officers from the various divisions, and it was quite encouraging to hear the members or the families of people that actually were resident in new buyers, but also talking to the staff, because if you've got high morale within your staff, you know, people will go that 101%. So just to have that minute that the subcommittee did a lot of work as well.
Councillor Montgomery.
Yeah, just through the chair, could I just ask, can you maybe expand on a nursing provision that's there? Because I've had experience in my own family being in care homes, and I'm not really sure what the nursing provision was for at that stage, but it does seem like a good idea. Could you maybe expand on that, please?
So when new buyers first opened, there wasn't nursing provision in, and one of the things we explored and done kind of further investigation on, was that we looked at the number of hospital admissions that was coming from new buyers compared to other care homes. So new buyers accounts for about 11% of the care home population. There's about 594 places in Midlothian. So it was 11% of the total number of beds, but they were accounting for about 25% of hospital admissions. So by bringing the nursing in, so senior nurses, band 6 nurses, so it's the same as a district nurse level. So they're there from 8 in the morning till 8 in the evening throughout the week. What we have saw is a significant reduction in the number of admissions in the hospital by having nursing on staff. Nurses, carers are reporting that it's great to have the nurses locally there all the time. They can go and raise questions. But also what we're also getting is really good feedback from the nurses about how they're actually almost learning and being trained by the care support workers, who have got a huge amount to offer as well, sort of thing. So it's been a real kind of sense of folk coming together, and having a nurse, senior nurse on site has been hugely beneficial.
Good, thank you. Councillor Winchester.
I just have one concern, and that the area on medication hasn't been met. This is a really important area, and I would have thought that more work would have been done. I'm assuming it has been done since the report.
That was a frustration that we had and a disappointment we had that we hadn't fully addressed that. We have done further work in relation to that and have brought in a daily audit that determines the issues around medication. What we did determine, and it's not to reduce it in any way, because medication is hugely significant, but much of it was around medication, particularly topical medication, not being signed for. So that was a real an area we had to get into. So we have addressed that. So there's a daily audit undertaken by one of the managers to determine everyone who go around all the medications to make sure it's been administered and signed for. Any member of staff identifies an issue, then we address that on a 3-stage process. First, there's just a reminder of the training, you know, what and some of the issue was, and escalating up appropriately as we do that. We're also in the process of introducing electronic recording, which is a far more effective way of flagging when something has not been signed for or administered. So we're working closely with one of the local pharmacies that will introduce that over the coming months.
Councillor Smale.
Thank you much, Alistair, and congratulations on the progress made here. I wonder if you could put a little bit in the financial context. At one stage, I think it was costing us something like £500,000 extra adverse to budget to bring new buyers round. There are also issues, of course, about reliability of staff, absenteeism, there were also comments I think I picked up that there was a demarcation dispute within the grades of workers there. I wonder if you could address that question, which is to do with the flexibility of the staff at new buyers. And that finally leads to a point that's been made by several councillors over the years. What should we be comparing new buyers against? Is it comparable to other similar institutions in the rest of Scotland? And can we actually hold our hands up and say that we're delivering good value for money as well as a very high standard of service?
Thank you. One issues we had with new buyers was in terms of overall budget, was delivering an adverse kind of pressure. So through the social care fund, there was further investment in place, particularly that around the delivery in relation to nursing inputs, but also the opportunity just to review whether we had the staffing right. So a significant part of, I think, where new buyers is, it's been around the restructure that's gone in the service review that went through. And that was very much to move away from who was a grade 2 and who was a grade 4 to actually what's a job that needs done and actually how do we meet the needs of residents. And we did a lot of work talking with staff and understanding what the day-to-day tasks were. That resulted in a coming together of a grade 3 post, which allows a far greater flexibility of people saying, I'm a 2, I can't do what that does, because actually the only person that lose out on that was ultimately the resident. So what that brought in was only the grade three post in there. We then, following feedback from unions and staff, we then brought in a grade five care practitioner role. So there's always a care practitioner on duty at all times as well, and that's a grade five post. And that just gives a greater degree of kind of seniority, but also consistency of approach, supported by activity coordinator as well. And again, that bringing in deputy managers and the care home managers. In some sense, it gives a degree of progression for staff, but also gives absolute clarity around where decision makings are and actually the lines of accountability with staff as well, sort of thing. So we were very keen that staff had a job description and a remit and a role that was very much focused on the individuals and focused on the residents rather than whether it was a two and whether it was a four. So we've done a good bit of work around that. And I think what's heartening for us is that we have significant applications for posts coming in. I spoke with Craig this morning, who's the manager there, and at the moment there's two vacancies. Those are just in the process of being filled, where previously we were running quite significant vacancies and haven't relied on agency staff, which in effect impacted on the quality of care and also impacted on staff who invariably had to show the agency worker what to do. So it was a double hit in a sense. So we saw a huge change in that. And I think that's, as I say, reflective of this sense of consistency of fairness that now people talk about new buyers in terms of a place to work. Whereas previously staff started at different times of the day, and it was interesting when what the manager says was one of the most heartening things he saw was staff leaving and coming in together and leaving work together, and that real sense of folk being part of a team, whereas previously someone started 20 minutes before and it was an hour later because actually that suited the person. And actually we've balanced that about the flexibility in our workforce, but also about the needs of the residents coming first. So huge amount of work within that. Where we benchmark ourselves, ideally we'll be coming back in the next inspector report and saying it's a five, and then next time it's a six. I think I think we should be the flagship area. We know we deliver this as a local authority and as a partnership through integration. I think we should be aiming as high as we can. I think the first point, we should be aiming to be at level best in Midlothian. I think we're beginning to see some of that with the number of people wanting to come to new buyers. I think that's a measure in itself. I think the care inspector endorses much of what we do and gives us a validity and a triangulation of that from an independence. What I'm more interested as well is around the number of people keen to come, families who want to be involved. And permit me with one small anecdote, but there was actually recently when one of our residents died, actually the family held the service in New Byres because that was their home, and that was probably one of the first times that's happened, and it was a real, and that family's remained really involved. And I think Councillor Russell was right to pick up earlier around the work around the New Byres the PRS subcommittee, which done a huge amount of work and spent time meeting family members and so on, and particularly that family were keen to establish the friends of New Byres. So I think there's something in there that you can sometimes lose in a scrutiny report, but actually points to us towards a place that it's about where people want to come and seize their home.
Thank you very much for those explanations, and I think for those of us that were here in the last council term, we'll appreciate how much hard work has went into New Byres, and I particularly appreciate the point about the subcommittee as well. There was a lot of hard work went in, not just from council, but also internally as well, and there has been a lot of investment in staff, and I think that's now beginning to show, so it's good to see it receiving a grade four. Moving on to item 5.3, which is Hawthorne Children and Families Report. Joan, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. For those of you that don't know, Hawthorne Children's Centre is a children's centre that's based up at Mayfield that offers early learning and childcare placements for up to 48 children. I suppose it's significant to note is that we also have a lot of children with very complex needs. We also attend Hawthorne Children's Centre. So on the 20th of March, we received an unannounced visit from the Care Inspectorate. And as you can see from reading the report, it's a very, very positive report in relation to going forward. They looked at two areas within the inspection, and that was care and support within the centre and quality of staffing. And as you can see from the report, the care and support of the children that we care for was excellent, and the staffing was very good, so a very positive report. The report highlights what we do well, that staff are confident in their roles, they know about child protection, and most importantly, they know the children very, very well. They also noted that there were very strong relationships with parents, with the children and with the other agencies who also come into the children's centre to support the children along the way. Good multi-agency working, and another significant factor, I think, which was very prevalent when I went up to receive the feedback, was that the management team were very visible and active within the centre, and every parent that they spoke to, etc., all knew the management team's names and were confident in saying that they offer support when and if required. As you can see from this report, there are no requirements and no recommendations in relation to taking anything forward. They did put in a note in relation to, as when we have the pictures up on the wall, referring to the wellbeing indicators in relation to GIRFECT, which is a point noted. But that was the only point that they made in relation to the centre. So happy to take any questions.
A very pernicious point, it sounds like, Joan. Any questions or comments? No? Thank you very much. Moving on to item 5.4, Mid Lothian Council Annual Performance Report 2016-17.
Thank you, Chair. This is the annual performance report for the year 2016-17. It sets out the Single Mid Lothian Plan priorities, key elements of progress and the challenges in relation to each of the Single Mid Lothian Plan themes, a performance indicator summary, and also the balanced scorecard indicators for 2016-17. And I recognise for councillors that are new to this form of reporting, this is a huge report with lots of detail in it, but you will get more familiar with these reports as we bring these up on a quarterly basis to both this committee and to the Cabinet. There has been a lot in the way of achievement and progress in the last year across the council, as the report makes clear. I suppose, for me, most notably in terms of educational attainment and positive destinations, and you've already seen other reports in relation to that. Also, I think we're seeing significant progress on integration. You can see also a number of services have received awards for their services, children's services, roads, sport and leisure, and others. And there have been a number of successful funding bids, which are also detailed there. So I think there is much to be positive about. At the same time, the challenges are very considerable. These are familiar challenges, I think, to all of you, not least from the induction programme. And that is about sharply reducing budgets, rapid population growth, and the associated service and infrastructure pressures which go with that combination of circumstances. So for all of the great work being done in Mid Lothian, and there is a lot of it, until we have a robust programme to fully bridge the budget gap, that remains a matter of very high risk for the Council. There's a lot more detail in the individual service reports which follow on the agenda, but I'd be happy to deal with any questions at this stage, Chair.
Questions or comments? No? Shall we move on? I think the only comment that I would make is I think the summary on the front is great, but sometimes I think it can be a little wordy, and it would be great to see a kind of easy to read version, if you like, particularly for the general public. But that's my own personal comment.
Just to say that in parallel with this, we do have obligations in terms of public performance reporting, which also, it has to be said, has a lot of detail in it, but I think is a more, perhaps a more manageable kind of collection of information, and that's on the Council website if it's of interest to members as well.
Thank you. Moving on to item 5.5, Local Government Benchmarking Framework Report by Kenneth Laurie.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of this report is to update the Committee on the Local Government Benchmarking Framework and to present an overview of the Council's performance against the indicators for 2015-16. The Local Government Benchmarking Framework has been in place for a number of years now, and all 32 Scottish councils have been working with the Improvement Service to develop a common approach to benchmarking, developing a series of common indicators which allow performance comparisons across all of Scotland's 32 authorities. And really the purpose of the framework is to support councils to deliver better outcomes for communities by benchmarking and learning from councils who are achieving the best performance in relation to local service delivery. In the most recent year, there's been quite a considerable increase in the number of benchmarking indicators, with additions being made to the indicator set in the areas of education, economic development and planning, so that there's now a national data set comprising 69 indicators, 67 of which are relevant to Midlothian. And what this report does is it sets out the performance in relation to these for each of seven service groupings. In the previous council, we've had some quite detailed discussions with members about the merits and indeed the weaknesses of the benchmarking framework, given the very different nature and scale of the 32 councils in Scotland and how comparable their services are necessarily. And we still have some concerns about the reliability of the data set in a few areas. But I do also think that it does provide genuinely useful pointers to areas where we as a council can look to improve our own performance. And the overall picture, I think, is quite a mixed one. You'll see at the bottom of the second page of the report, we have slightly more indicators in the top half than in the bottom half. And indeed, at the back of the appendix is a greater breakdown of that. But the thing that's really interesting and always has been from certainly my perspective is you can essentially divide the indicators into three categories: those which relate to council performance, those which relate to cost, and those which relate to customer satisfaction as measured by the Scottish Household Survey. And if you look in a bit more detail at the indicators, in terms of performance, generally our position is relatively strong. There's some weak points, but a lot of our performance indicators are high in terms of the first and second quartiles. In terms of cost, I think the position is more mixed, as you'll see from the report. But in terms of public satisfaction, nearly all of our indicators are in the bottom quartile. And I don't think we've ever really satisfactorily come to a reason why that would be the case. I would say that we do have some concerns about the reliability of the Scottish Household Survey. This is a single survey which takes place across the whole of Scotland. And at a Scotland level, the sample gives very reliable data. But when you take it on a council level, particularly on the level of a small council, and the data set for Midlothian be maybe no more than about 200 or 250 households, the question of reliability is much more open. Having said that, if the figures were unreliable, you might expect them to be at the extremes across the four quartiles, whereas they're very much concentrated in the lower quartiles. So I think that opens interesting questions for us about, perhaps about some of our communications, perhaps some of our reporting of information to the public. But that essentially is the mix across the indicators. On the performance side, we tend to be increasingly strong compared to a lot of other councils, but on the public satisfaction side, we're generally in the lower quartile. So there's a lot of detail in the report. I'm happy to take any questions which members might have, or indeed if members want to raise issues offline, more than happy to pick up on anything at that stage. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Kenneth, for that interesting report. Any questions or comments? Shall we move on? In line with order of business that we agreed at the beginning, we'll move straight on to item 5.10, which is the Education Annual Performance Report 2016-17. Thanks, Grace.
Thank you. I'm committed to the creation of a world-class education system through both equity and excellence. This report for this quarter actually focuses on a summary of the whole year for education. I've also outlined on the front page the four main targets that we were working towards over the course of 16-17. Firstly, to build excellence by raising attainment overall. Secondly, to close the gap between the most and the least disadvantaged. To really focus in on teaching, learning and assessment, knowing that what happens in classes makes a real difference, and self-evaluation for self-improvement, which is all about building the leadership capacity across our whole system as a whole. So in terms of building excellence and raising attainment, one of our main targets was to improve attendance, and I'm really pleased that our primary schools have delivered one of the highest years that we've ever had in terms of attendance, up at 95%, and have made a real difference in terms of reducing exclusion. We've set a very high target for our secondary sector, and we're not quite meeting that aspirational target yet, and we'll continue to really promote that, particularly our work undertaking an inclusion review to make sure that we really closely meet the needs of children, particularly when they move into S2 and S3. So that will remain a priority for 17-18. In terms of attainment, for the first time back in December, the Scottish Government produced a report called Achievement of Curriculum for Excellence Levels. So it was the first time across the whole of Scotland that attainment in line with CFE levels for the end of P1, P4, P7 and S3 was published. So there's a lot of work that councils have been doing across the country on ensuring that we have robustness in terms of the validation of that exercise coming in. And next year, the Scottish Government will implement standardised testing. So we'll have not just the teacher judgment information, but we'll also have standardised testing. We're under the national average according to the December report, so that's why we want to do a huge amount of work, particularly ensuring that our P1s are brought in line. So if we can close the gap, particularly in reading and writing by the end of P1, we know that then the curriculum will open up much wider for those children moving on. So we've been targeting our resources in that P1 stage, which complements all the really good work we've been doing in early years. In terms of the senior phase, we've made significant progress over the course of the last year in terms of attainment by the end of S4, S5 and S6. And that's reflected in what Kenneth mentioned around the local government benchmarking framework, particularly the data that you see at the end of the report around quintile 1, 4 and 5, the positive destinations as a whole, but also the average total tariff scores. So that's all moving in the right direction, including a couple of those indicators where we've moved from the bottom quartile into the second quartile. So we're really pleased at that significant shift there. In terms of positive destinations, obviously we reported on that earlier, and we were really pleased that in terms of initial destinations that Midlothian's now ranked fifth, and that was 95.1%. Now obviously we need to do a lot of work on ensuring those sustained destinations and also the 16 to 19 year old destinations. So although we're becoming really strong in school leaver destinations, we need to grow that, particularly when people may fall out of employment or a college place further on. So we've got a really good team that are working really hard on that, and what's made the difference there for us in Midlothian is actually the street work. It's people knocking on doors, it's working directly with children and young people on the ground, and that's been really positive. Closing the gap between the most and the least disadvantaged, we've been doing a lot of work around that, and we've been publishing new information using the Insight local and national benchmarking, which actually shows that graph by SIMD1 all the way through to SIMD10, and that's been really important for us because we're able to hone in on specific children, look at their background factors, their family factors, working really closely with Jones Services in terms of children's services, knowing that we need to take a full family approach to actually making that difference, and that's worked really, really well for us. But we still have a job of work to do, and interestingly in Midlothian we actually have to improve performance in deciles 8 and 9. So in some of those more affluent communities we really need to raise the bar in terms of building that excellence within those communities themselves, and you see that coming through. We would want to ensure that more children actually achieve more hires by the end of S6 than they currently are achieving. In terms of teaching and learning assessment, we were really pleased back in November. We launched the first ever Scottish Visible Learning Conference, and Professor John Hattie, who's the guru there, he's a professor from New Zealand, actually came and presented at that conference. And that was fantastic because Midlothian teachers were actually presenting at a world conference, and they were sharing stories from their own classrooms. So it built on the seminar that our teachers and young people gave in this very council chamber, actually sharing that on an international stage. And that was actually really, really powerful. And they were some of our youngest teachers, only a year or two out of their NQT, their teacher training years, actually really moving a whole system on. And that was really powerful. And we'll be also partaking in that in November this year. In terms of the leadership of change, we have really tackled that head on this year, and we implemented the Uplifting Leadership Programme. Professor Andy Hargreaves wrote a really lovely book together with Alma Harris, which was all about what are the key things that you can do as a school leader to really maximise the difference that you make. And we ran that for the whole of last year, but not just with our head teachers. We also delivered the twilight sessions for all of our principal teachers and deputy head teachers, so they were receiving the same training that our head teachers were receiving, and that work there has been really, really strong. So we're going to roll that out even further to create more leadership positions for people that are technically not promoted as such but really want to make that next stage in their learning. In terms of the September and October inspection we had of Community Learning and Development. That's a brand new service that's now called Lifelong Learning and Employability. It was only launched in January of last year. In the September, they found out that they were actually being inspected, but across the board, they were evaluated as very good. And we were really heartened because they were saying actually there was an ethos of a shared endeavour, so that was clear at all levels, not just in the strategic inspection, but also at the place base. So that was important for us. The rollout of the early years, we've given some summary there of that, but that's going to be a major priority for us moving forward, shifting the 600 hours to the 1140 hours by 2020. And we're really pleased that the Scottish Government have chosen Midlothian as one of the trials, so that will take place in the Mayfield area. So we're really pleased that we're part of that really early on to actually show what makes a difference, and that will build on the work that we've already done in Woodburn within the Family Learning Centre. So moving forward, planning strategically the next steps for 17-18, our theme for next year is mind the gap, so not close the gap, but mind the gap, taking a closer look at progression, progression, progression. So we want to make sure that we're maximising children's progression at every single stage in their learning. And in line with the National Improvement Framework, which was also published last year, the four main areas of focus will be excellence through raising attainment, closing the gap, getting it right for every Midlothian child, and also positive destinations. So as Kenneth also mentioned, there are many emerging challenges and also risks, and I've outlined some of them. The first one, and probably the most pertinent, relates to the pace of legislative change. And you'll know that last week the Government's Review Next Steps paper was published. We've also got the demographic growth, and we've also got the expansion of early years. So a very, very exciting time for education with many, many opportunities. But we also have to bear in mind the legislative changes that are to come between now and 2020 itself. So happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Comments? Councillor Baird.
Thank you. I just want to thank the Education Department for the report. It's very good. I think we're seeing a lot of progress. I'm looking forward to over the next 5 years, specifically up to 2020, to make sure that we deliver for the children. Thank you.
Thanks. Good to hear such positive comments at a scrutiny committee. Councillor Montgomery.
Sorry, no, it's not any criticism. It's a very, very positive report. But page 239, the sort of averages for reading, writing and various things, it's kind of mixed. You know, and we're better in some and not so good in others. Can I ask why we don't have a baseline for listening and talking? That's something councillors really need to do as well, a bit, I suppose. I don't know where a baseline would be, but I just wonder why there wasn't a figure in for that.
No, that's a very good point. So for the first time, the Scottish Government moving forward are going to collect data for listening and talking. So before, it was really reading, writing, and it wasn't really maths, it was more numeracy. So those traditionally would be the areas from Curriculum for Excellence that you would collect in. So for the first time, which is a really positive, actually, listening and talking is going to be gathered, and it's also going to be published nationally. So it's just really a mechanism that nobody really collected that in. And equally, it's really quite a hard area to evaluate. So it's something that's quite difficult, and teachers find listening and talking and the evaluation of writing really quite difficult areas. The reading's easier, and a standardised test can do that. And equally with a numeracy, a set standardised online test can do that. But the other areas are quite subjective. But moving forward, that will be collected annually and scrutinised annually.
Councillor Johnson.
A few weeks ago, a local head teacher gave very public evidence at Parliament stating that there was not enough support provided for school staff for kids with difficult issues, and I wonder what is being done to address that.
Well, firstly, I would say that was somebody's own personal view. Joan and I have been working very, very hard over the course of the last year, and Andrew Sheridan, who's my school group manager for inclusion, has been undertaking an inclusion review, and Joan's service has been undertaking a children's services review. The principle that we're hoping to move to is the principle that funding follows the child. So within the way that we manage our budgets historically, that wasn't the case. So now we have managed to get ourselves to a place where that's absolutely transparent and fair. It's quite a significant shift in terms of building those resources around the child. And what's been really important for us in Midlothian are two core principles. Firstly, a Midlothian child is a Midlothian child. And secondly, the presumption of mainstream. So what we're now doing moving forward is having very bespoke provision, which centres around the needs of the child. So traditionally you may have allocated a teacher and a learning assistant. Now we're saying for some children it might be a speech and language therapist that's required, it may be a play therapist, it may be counselling. So what we're doing is try to open up that funding envelope in order to arrange bespoke provision centred around the child and the family at the core, rather than saying these are the service areas that we've got to offer and a child needs to fit that. We're saying actually the child should come first and the support services built around the child.
So I just want to ensure that if a child is at one school and for some reason or another moves to another school, the extra support doesn't stay at the first school, it goes to the next school.
So under Getting It Right for Every Midlothian Child, every child has a single child's plan. So that plan for that child and that family would follow that child. And what would also follow is all the support mechanisms around that. And it's a really important principle, because sometimes you find that some of our children that are in most need move more than some other children. So it's really important that we make sure that that structure and that framework follows the child, and more importantly, actually, the child and the family.
Thanks. Grace, I just have one question, actually, not directly related to the performance report, but future performance, and just to get some reassurance. I remember at the council induction programme, it was discussed that there was some unease within some of our teaching staff about Brexit, and specifically one member of staff had actually left the country, and I feel like we lost a valuable head teacher there. I just wondered, are we doing any future scoping work just to make sure that there's no uncertainties that we can't kind of sort out within ourselves? I know that the national picture is ever changing, but you know, have we done any exploratory work there?
Yeah, we absolutely have, and it's been an item that's been discussed also at the Directors Forum, where 32 directors all meet. We've also been proactive in Midlothian in linking absolutely with the university. So the university has some concerns, for example, around life sciences and around big data. So we're not just wanting to safeguard that for our existing teaching profession, we're also looking at the skill set of our young people coming through and really trying to carefully plan the provision that we're putting in place to make sure that we build the skills in its totality of our younger generation coming through, and also looking at our workforce in its totality, because we also have an opportunity with the expansion of the 1140 hours to skill up our workforce in maybe a different way. So where some skill sets may not be required anymore, we're looking at our workforce planning in its widest possible sense across the council to say, do we have, where we have increasing demand in one service, could we actually retrain? And we've also had very positive conversations with Edinburgh College to put in those provisions where people can work and undertake the qualifications at the same time. So it's very, very high on our agenda, absolutely, particularly for education, and also around the 1+2 languages. That's another area where we want to make sure that we're safeguarding everything moving forward.
Good, thank you. That's very reassuring. Councillor Smale.
Again, thank you very much for the presentation and all the encouraging data we have here. Perhaps churlish to point out there's one area that seems still a problem for Midlothian, and that's exclusions, which are set out on page 238. I know this is a tiny number, but of course before an exclusion there's a lot of disruption to the classroom. Are there any ways in which we can manage this problem better?
There absolutely is, and that's something that we're really aware of. So we're above the national average for exclusions, particularly in the secondary sector. We've done a lot of work on realigning the curriculum to make sure that it meets the needs of all children. So our six secondaries have been working hard across the board to make sure that we can tailor make that provision. We've introduced far more vocational courses and also allowing the children, because more children are also staying on at school, which is a real positive, but we need to make sure that we can meet the needs of all of the children. So we've been reshaping the curriculum, and Andrew's inclusion review will also help, because we're seeing where some children begin to non-attend. That's a very early sign of a child that's maybe in P5, P6, beginning to not engage in their education. If through the inclusion review we can tap into that much, much earlier on, put in bespoke support at that stage, it means that we can tailor that provision moving forward. So we're seeing more S2 exclusions because we've maybe not done the work around the broad general education curriculum. So this year, moving forward, the secondary schools have that in their improvement plans across the board. But the more that we actually look at the data that's showing us in primary coming through, that's going to be really important. The other aspect to take into consideration is across four of our primaries, we've got inclusion resources, but we don't actually have a secondary inclusion resource. So we've got Saltersgate, which is in essence a special school rather than a mainstream school. What we're trying to do moving forward is within three of our communities to have enhanced nurture provisions. So for those children that really need that tailor-made approach, going into a very busy secondary setting can be quite alarming for them. So they may act out, or conversely, they might not attend. We're hoping to replicate what works really well in our primaries and grow that into the secondary sector. It's a big, big piece of work, but staff are really committed to making that happen. But it's probably a year or two before we see those results actually come through.
Good. Thank you, Grace. Moving on, or moving back rather, to item 5.6, which is on page 161 in your packs. It's the Adult Health and Social Care Annual Performance Report 2016-17. Alistair, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. So, as it notes, the kind of setting out the strategic direction of the IJB, and that people in Midlothian will live longer and healthier lives, but getting the right advice, care, and support in the right place at the right time. Obviously, the creation of the Health and Social Care Partnerships is bringing together health and social care and our third sector partners to really think through and deliver services in a different way to ensure is that people are living well and living as healthy as they possibly can. In noting the first kind of section on integration, it notes that there's two joint heads of service. So in true tradition, it's going to be a double act on our section. So I will lead off in relation to broader integration of older people, and then Alison will come in relation to adult services. Just picking up some of the points, so we've been in these posts now for just over a year, and we're now working to look at the management review and the team working towards us to ensure that we are really beginning to drive forward integration in relation to nursing roles, social work roles, social care, etc. So that there's a piece of work that's ongoing that will begin to take that forward. Some of the bits where I guess we've seen some of that already is around the nursing staff going into new buyers, NHS, Lothian employed nursing staff, which I think has been a significant move forward, and the broader plan for the recovery hub, which Alison will pick up as part of her overall update as well. The world of integration has brought forward a whole new language for us as well. So directions is one of the new areas, which is the kind of legal term that the integrated joint boards send out to NHS Lothian and Mid Lothian Council to direct their work. So noting that this was an annual report, though, that those directions have now been sent to Mid Lothian Council and NHS Lothian for 17-18, and there's work now underway to begin to implement those directions. Further work related to the IJB has been around development of a workforce and financial plan, the risk register, etc. So some of the kind of housekeeping stuff in relation to development of the IJB has taken place over the last year, and particularly work around the audit and risk committee as well. And looking particularly in relation to older people, the older people strategy was launched in late November, and we continue to kind of develop that over the coming year, and how we begin to implement that. That really kind of gives us the key driver within the our strategic commissioning plan of the IJB, and really sets out how we can support people to live well in later life, and very much a focus on self-management and people living life to the full for as long as possible. We talked about new buyers. One of the developments, a recent development within new buyers, has been the establishment of 24 dementia beds. We are now halfway through filling those beds, and that's very much, we've identified two streets. People understand new buyers, it's five sets of 12 streets, 1st through to 5th Street. And so we've worked towards it being a dedicated dementia beds. We've been working closely with our consultant colleagues and our nursing staff at the community hospital to get the right feel to the place, and also look at kind of a good pathway where people may well be in the community hospital and can be discharged out to new buyers. We've been heartened by the number of staff keen to be involved in that on those streets, and we've been delivering additional training. That's not to say that New Buyers has not had people with dementia before, but allows us a more dedicated support structure to be in place within there. One of the key challenges we're facing within older people is a care at home sector. So we have both an internal and external delivery model in relation to that. We've recently had to bring in one of our services on a temporary basis in-house that was previously external, and we are currently have a procurement process underway that will look to bring in more service providers into the area. It's a real pressure point. The west of Midlothian and Pennycook area gives us the greatest pressures, and we're seeing a significant increase in the number of people whose discharge is delayed from hospital as a result of waiting for a package of care within the west of Midlothian. So we currently have a one of our own staff working alongside that team. It's Midlothian West Service. So we have put our own staff in place there to bolster the service and to build it up to allow us to provide high-quality care as well as support discharge. I think there's a broader challenge across probably across Scotland, but we certainly feel it within Lothian around care at home, and I think we've lost sight to a certain extent more broadly of the importance of the caring role. I think we need to refocus and remind people the importance of actually and the value of treating our most vulnerable in society, and really begin to do work. We've established the Health and Social Care Academy, which is both about people returning to work and looking at people leaving school, etc., about having a career in care. The strength of working alongside NHS in terms of integration is also around that we saw the move to degree level for nursing, and for many that's a real barrier. But for what we do know, that those who maybe spent 10 years in caring have a huge amount of skills that we can support them to begin to support them into a career in nursing if that's what they want to do. So there's new models that we begin to look at, but I think overall we really need to be focusing on how we begin to value caring as a role. I think some aspect of that is financial to a degree, and the living wage now being paid to all our care at home providers I think has been important, but I think it goes far beyond that. It goes beyond the valuing role. So a piece of work that we're taking forward is the overall care at home review, and we'll be bringing that back, taking that forward over the coming months, supported by, as I say, a strong recruitment campaign. Other areas, just for highlighting, we have a single dementia service within Mid Lothian, and that's part of the government's eight pillars approach, which is really about a broader holistic approach to supporting people with dementia that looks at broader community supports right through their medical needs. So we were part of a pilot project in relation to that, and just noting that the independent evaluation came back saying that what they've saw within Mid Lothian represents what they think is almost the ideal model. We need to continue to build on that. But I think what that has demonstrated is a partnership between social work staff, nursing staff, and Alzheimer's Scotland, the third sector partners, and really kind of coming together and putting in place good support, particularly in relation to post-diagnostic support, which can be incredibly traumatic for families, and getting the right supports in place. So that model, I think, is something we'd be keen to build on, and I'm aware there's some new councillors in the room, and if there's people who wish to come along and visit the service, and we'd be more than happy to accommodate that as well. And that would be supported by our kind of three-year dementia action plan. I suppose some of the other aspects, just for finishing off, is really work around that kind of lower level support, if that's probably the right way to describe it. So our day services are a hugely important role in just keeping people well, keeping people connected, and actually stops us medicalising old age. It's going to happen to all of us, unfortunately. Actually, what we need to do is to have people give them skills and resilience to work well and to manage well in old age. And I think our day services are really crucial in that, and our work with the voluntary sector. The grassy rigs out in Woodburn, which have recently kind of dropped a change to a drop-in cafe and so on, are, I think, a hugely important part of the role that we do, and hugely important in keeping people connected, and we know that social isolation is a huge factor, so anything that can keep people part of the community, feel they're contributing, and actually a sense of worth, I think is really important. So work that we continue to do, and you know, keen and happy that we've been working closely with Woodburn to develop that. Those are probably the key bits I want to pick up. I'll pass over to Alison.
Thank you. If I move on to learning disabilities, TV at Court is our new 12-person complex care unit for adults with learning disability and complex support needs. Within the report, we'd highlighted that it was due to be handed over to us at the end of May. Due to a slight delay that are technical issues to do with the drying of the floor that I would not be able to in any level of detail explain to you, we are due to get the building handed over to us in the next couple of weeks. I would really recommend, if anybody wants to go and visit, that we'd be really keen to show people around. It's a stunning looking building, and it's a real testament that we've been able to do that as part of our council house rebuild. Because of the nature of some of the people that will be moving into that accommodation, it might be good to do it whilst it's empty rather than full, as it won't be as easy for us to accommodate visits once we have all of the residents that are moved into that accommodation. We'd done a procurement exercise, and Richmond Fellowship for Scotland had been appointed as the care provider. They've been undertaking a fairly significant recruitment phase, and we've been undertaking a really intensive training proposal that they've been involved with NHS staff and council staff as part of that, to ensure that we have a really well-skilled workforce who can deal with some of our most complex young people in the area. And we have a phased move in. We've been doing lots of work with the families and individuals, so we're due to have the first people moving in next month. So all of that work is going really well, and it really provides an opportunity for us to enhance some of those skills that are available locally to support people with learning disabilities and complex needs. With integration and the redesign of our services, there's going to be less of a focus on us using inpatient hospital beds. Certainly one of the 12 vacancies will be used as a place of safety, which is almost a step up, step down. So where someone kind of is almost at the point of needing hospital, but actually what we need is there's been a breakdown in the community and we need some really good supports that are available for an intensive short piece of work. So we're putting some of those things in place so that as we redesign our services, we've got the right facilities available locally. And housing is one of those key areas for us to be able to develop sustainable services. And we're really lucky locally that we've been able to work really well in partnership with colleagues in housing to get the right housing available for people. One of our other key areas has been about a day service review, and we're drawing to the closing stages of that. And it's about providing a better understanding of whether we've got the right day services with the right people in the right places at the right kind of times. And we've kind of been reshaping what we currently have and what we think we have moving forward. And that's very much about some of those lower levels, making sure that we've got the right things for people in terms of social isolation, and that actually it's a big focus about how we're looking at employability. So certainly working with colleagues in lifelong learning and employability to make sure that we've got that right pathway for people in terms of what makes sense for them. Just in case you haven't noticed, if you want to check your placemats out for your drinks at this point in time, we've launched the Two Trumpets, which is the Midlothian Autism Strategy, so that has been completed. There's art exhibition that's been available in Fairfield House, and there's been some pictures around Midlothian House, and we've made sure that as part of this, so these are pieces of artworks that have been done by parents who have children with autism, really just wanting to explain in a different way what autism is in different cases and what that might mean. So if you haven't had an opportunity to come over to Fairfield House, where we've got more of that exhibition, certainly it would be a good chance. And the autism strategy as well, I think, is a really good example of a really easily accessible strategy document. It doesn't read like most of our strategy documents. It's a real sense of a story, and I think you get a real flavour of what it might be to have autism and the voice of people with autism, of carers and of staff who are working alongside that as well. So it's been a real sense. That exhibition is only going to be here for a couple of weeks, and then it is touring around our libraries and will likely go to other local authority areas who've expressed an interest in how we've engaged with people with autism and their family carers to begin to really shape our strategy. Physical disabilities and sensory impairments, we were unsuccessful for a big literary funding to change some of the employment, because employment is a big issue across lots of areas with people really keen to get into that. But we have, however, through putting the bid in, developed much closer links with lifelong learning and employability to ensure that we get a real focus on being able to support people with physical disability back into work. And there's good work that's going on in the implementation. We work very closely with Forward Mid, which is a user-led organisation around physical disabilities, to ensure that we implement all areas of the Physical Disability Action Plan. Sensory impairment awareness training is being rolled out across our care homes and within our care at home staff. And we've been looking at British Sign Language Plan is out for consultation. So we're really looking at how we can develop across a range of areas in sensory impairment. Within long-term conditions, merit is our Midlothian Enhanced Rapid Response and Intervention Team. So we've got an advanced practitioner physiotherapist who's really started work, particularly in terms of community respiratory service and how we support people better in the community around some of that, particularly to try and avoid some of those admissions to hospital and to ensure that we're supporting people locally and giving people the skills to support themselves and to self-manage their conditions. And really looking at how we can develop in terms of anticipatory care planning and nursing around those areas as well, so that people are really in control and making those choices and decisions about what works well for them. Self-directed support is a mechanism by which people can choose how they receive their services. So traditionally, we would do an assessment, we would provide a service. Self-directed support allows people the opportunity to either take a direct payment or on much more terms of shaping and directing the service. We're now much more of ensuring that self-directed support is business as usual. We're not seeing this as something that's particularly different, but it's very much about being outcome-focused and really ensuring that individual service users are at the heart of decision-making about how they take things forward. Substance misuse, we had a really challenging year in terms of the fact that we've been needing to plan for cuts of 23% from the government funding in terms of substance misuse. So the Midlothian core group has really been spending a lot of time working about how we can ensure to meet the criteria and priorities that we have within Midlothian in a much straightened financial situation. obviously that's a situation that we're facing across all areas. I think it has just come to the fore within substance misuse services at a much earlier stage. And one of the key things around that has been continuing to keep the focus on recovery services and how we support people in that recovery journey. So of all of the areas that we've done our best to protect in terms of those budget savings, recovery is the area that we've focused upon. One area in terms of taking forward integration is about the development of a recovery hub between substance misuse and mental health staff. And it's around how we begin to work in a very different way around people and continuing with that conversation about recovery from the first time people present to us rather than recovery being at the end of somebody's journey, and how we begin to work with people in a really trauma-informed way and have all of staff on the same agenda and co-located so that we can share some of that skills and expertise. Other big areas of improvement in mental health has been the development of mental health access points. We have clinics that run 2 days a week. We had significant issues with our psychological therapies waiting times. There were people who were in distress who were struggling to get access to those services. The access point has really helped in terms of having much easier for people to get that immediate response and for us to decide early whether psychological therapies is the right support for somebody or if there are other wider community supports that could have more benefit for them. The House of Care Wellbeing Project has also been instrumental within that, and we had that rolled out now to 8 GP practices in the area, which means that actually for some people that 10-minute GP appointment isn't quite enough for us to do that signposting and support to make sure people can maintain and help in terms of their own health and wellbeing. Sorry, we've got a lot going on in the area, I feel, so we're saying through this. Criminal justice, again, the new structure for community justice came into being on the 31st of March. We're now reporting in a slightly different way. We have the board locally in terms of taking forward that agenda. And there's an improvement plan that we've sent so far to Community Justice Scotland, so we're waiting. We've got a 3-year plan to be working together in terms of delivering on those plans. Thank you. And happy for questions for either of us.
Thanks, Alison, for that very comprehensive report. Councillor Russell.
Need to move it.
I'll do it.
Yeah, just a couple of comments and then a question. Obviously, the Gracie Riggs, as we call it in Woodburn, is doing really, really well. I pop in every so often because I'm in that age bracket that I can go and get something. So it really is working well. The people that go there thoroughly enjoy the companionship that they get. And I'm pleased to see that the work's been done with the recovery teams. The recovery journey for many people can take, obviously, different side roads, but it's good that, although there is that cut, that we're seriously looking at what we can do with regards to helping each and individual person that's going through that journey, and obviously their family as well. The question is basically around Highbank. I've had opportunity to visit recently quite a lot because a friend's in there at the moment. And I know that the work's been done with the enabling team. But I just wonder, you're saying in here about to become a purpose-built intermediate care home. I just wanted to question what would be different in the home that people would see?
Well, Highbank to a certain extent already does some of that intermediate kind of care. One of the biggest challenges we've got in Highbank is that the building's a bit tired and it's not really fit for purpose. So the access to greater physio access to, you know, the kind of gym areas and actual daily living to replicate some of that to help people to get them home, those are the challenges we've got within Highbank, which was an old care home, and we still have some residents in there. So that will be one aspect of it. What we also want to focus on is a greater emphasis on rehab and rehabilitation and assessment, so that actually we can in a closer alignment to the community hospital, so that when people are in the if they've gone into infirmary fractured hip or whatever, then actually, you know, the first option is to get them home. If that's not possible, then we get them to Highbank to then get them home. And if that's not a hospital, then, you know, Highbank and then the community hospital. So it's very much just trying to see how it fits in that overall pathway. But really, we want to focus on Highbank being at the quality around rehabilitation assessment. I think we've got the staff for that. I think we've got the approach for it. I think the building stops us doing some of those things.
Councillor Smale.
I wonder if I would ask a question about domiciliary care, and it relates to the table on page 179. I'm aware there's been cost pressures in domiciliary care. The numbers are really quite stunning. If you look between the top line SW1, between 2012-13, it was costing £12.46 an hour, and it peaked in 14-15 at £28.22 an hour. And if you drop down to the third line, the percentage of service users with intensive needs receiving care at home has actually fallen despite the very high hourly pay that we're needing to give, from 53.6% to 37%. By and large, I think everyone around the table would like domiciliary care to go as far as possible so we don't have to institutionalise our older citizens. I just wonder if these numbers are exaggerating the crisis, or have we been able to take any mediating measures to improve the efficiency of domiciliary care?
I seem to get all the good questions today. I think it's a really valid point. I think I want to avoid doing the normal NHS part, which is we'll debate the data, because I think that's unhelpful. I think there are some anomalies within that. However, notwithstanding that, I think what we're beginning to see in terms of where some of the pressures are in cost at care at home and for the internal, is that we're doing as a result of external providers not picking up the number of hours that they need to do, we're having to pick those up internal, and our internal service costs us more than an external service. So I'm probably oversimplifying, Council, when I say it's an 80-20 split, but 80% of our work is probably external, 20% is internal. We externalise about 5,000 hours a week, and at the moment, with one of our providers not delivering and handing back the contract, we're about 1,000 hours a week down. So if we think of that as our kind of set fee that we charge, is about £15.80 an hour for an external provider. Internal, because of the investing in our workforce and the change that the council have made, the minimum we would pay a member of staff is £10.40. Per hour. So once we add everything on in terms of council costs, that number goes above £15.80. Ultimately, those are our trained staff who are delivering in enablement service, so they're delivering it to a higher standard. And actually, their purpose is to reduce the need for someone's ongoing care, because they've reabled someone and actually they're far more independent. But due to some of those pressures within the external sector, we're seeing an increasing number of hours haven't been picked up with our internal in-house service, which is a more expensive service because of the specialised nature of what they do. And I think that's where causing some of that inflationary costs are. The work we were doing at the moment, as I say, we're going back out to the market under procurement process that will introduce more providers, potentially more, under a framework agreement, which should give us a greater degree of flexibility. We know that McSense, as a social enterprise, are very keen to pick up more hours. So by bringing them into the framework agreement, actually allows us to actually pass on significant amounts of work onto places like McSense, and I'm sure there'll be others as well.
Councillor Johnson.
Thank you very much. I really like the idea of, or that what's actually happened now is the community respiratory service, so we can all breathe more easily at home and not have to go in to badly polluted areas to go to a breathe easy clinic. But there is, I'm looking for assurance on care packages. And are people slipping through the net and going home without a care package? Because in the last 2 weeks I've heard of two people who are very frail, elderly, and who probably need that, who were not even consulted in hospital. And so if I know of two, there must be more slipping through the net. What are we doing to make sure that doesn't happen?
I think it's always difficult to determine what it is that we don't know. So if there are those situations, then it would be really keen to hear about them with here so we can pick them up with the hospital. The process for what happens is that when people are admitted into hospital, there's a daily list that we have of every admission from Midlothian. Our teams will look through that list and make contact with the hospital to see, A, to check if there's an existing package already in place or whether there's any support required. So we have an in-reach team who goes and does some of that. However, there'll be some who we do rely on the hospital to pass on that information to us sometimes. So if some of those bits have been missed, then we'd want to pick that up with the hospital so we can feed that back to them. And also we'd want to put in place support for someone who is assessed as needing a package of care. So if there's information can be passed on, we'd happily see it. We do work closely with the hospital. They may well not always get it right, and part of that is us picking up and having a conversation with them.
That's lovely, thank you. I can pick that with you later.
Councillor Montgomery.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Could I ask, I think it was Alison covered the substance misuse cut for 23%, which is quite a lot. It's hard to maybe make a judgment on it because it's not just substance misuse, it can be a lot of other factors spring from that crime and other aspects of disruption in the area. How confident are you that the 23% cut won't really, well, I think it will affect the service it has to do, but I mean, are you going to be coming back with quite detailed reports on how that's progressing? Because obviously we've had a level of service, it's not going to be able to be continued unless we transfer money in from other areas, and if we don't, I mean, how are you actually going to manage that, and how are you going to feed that back to the committee?
Certainly happy to come back. I mean, realistically, no service could have a 23% cut and there be no impact at all. There's been fairly significant, and that 23%, the budget that we're talking about includes inpatient and things that the NHS run, our NHS team, our social work service, as well as services that we commission, and that's across adults and children's services. This isn't a particular in terms of adults, although MELDAP in the management structure as the drug and alcohol partnership sits predominantly within adult services. I'm very happy to come back with more detailed plans in terms of how we're taking that piece of work forward and how we've come to some of the discussions and decisions that we have. We'd been in a fortunate position that we had some transformation monies available within substance misuse services that we've been able to use to bridge some of that gap, because part of what we're looking to do is see whether or not we can reshape and change the way that we deliver services so that we do minimise some of the impacts and the risks that would be faced by just doing a straight cut. But certainly very happy to come back with more detailed proposals in terms of a report, if that would be a helpful situation to have.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to reiterate the point about the autism exhibition, which I think is brilliant, and would really encourage everybody to go along and make sure they visit. Happy to move on to the next report, which is annual performance report for Customer and Housing Services. Kevin Anderson. Sorry, Councillor Alexander.
Hi. I just wondered if the money that's going into the CAT teams, I wondered if that should be used instead of reducing the drug availability, and that would help prevention as well.
Can you turn your microphone off? If you're asking the chair, it's probably not my place as chair of this committee to make that judgment. I don't want to put officers in a situation about answering a political point. I think it's probably best to leave that one there if everybody's content with that. Okay. But perhaps that's a discussion that we could have offline. We'll just move on to the performance report.
We've made the decision to reintroduce the CAT teams in principle with Scots Police Scotland, so I really don't know what the question actually means. I'm kind of lost with it.
Yeah, I think it was a political point that was made to or a question to an officer that I, as chair, don't find appropriate in this committee to take forward. If members want to discuss that point, I would suggest this isn't the place to do it.
Moving on. Kevin.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just on that last point, I am preparing a report to come forward to Council, as was instructed, and clearly that will be for a wider debate as members determine. In terms of Customer and Housing Services, the report provides an overview at the outset to give a context of our services and the outcomes over the first page and a half, before detailing the progress in the past reporting year of 16-17. In terms of housing, the Strategic Housing Investment Plan was submitted to Scottish Government following approval at Council. This determines the future development of affordable housing and the allocation of resources to increase the supply of affordable housing in Midlothian. Since then, we've had feedback from Scottish Government More Homes Division, which has been favourable in our bid and indeed has increased our resource planning assumption for the a five-year projection. In the past year, also saw the end of the right to buy policy in Scotland, and the impact of that in Midlothian is detailed in the report. Relative to homelessness, we've had a further year of reduced presentations, and that's a three-year trend now, which is against the national trend and really reflects the housing options model that's been applied through the Homeless Service. In customer services, we've continued the service review. We have completed phase one, which was really determining through customer profiling and insight where and how and the model of delivering access to council services. It also determined the management structure, which had been implemented. We progressed into phase two, which has been about channel shift, looking at alternative means of accessing services. Also those teams that delivered that, as well as delivering savings of £113,000. And we move into the final third phase from the summer onwards this year. In community safety, the Community Safety and Justice Partnership structure was implemented on the 1st of April. This followed the disestablishment of the regional community justice authorities across Scotland, and this is a service now being delivered locally through local authorities. The Licensing Board for Midlothian also approved an over-provisioning statement in the past year. And we also established the Serious and Organised Crime Integrity Group, which is led by the Director of Resources, to divert and deter criminality on a partnership basis across Midlothian. The service also saw expansion of the mediation service to increase and achieve resolution outcomes across a range of disputed areas, not just from tenancies, but also other service providers in Midlothian. In terms of challenges, we don't lack for those in the year coming ahead. We've referenced the city deal. That, whilst it's a challenge in terms of the development of the workstream opportunities that housing can provide here, it is also an opportunity for development over the 10 years. What I've not reported on here, but what I would anticipate in the coming year, is that there will be a focus and indeed some learning in terms of social housing following the tragic fire incident in London last week. And indeed there will be learning in social housing provision even for those authorities like us which do not have high-rise housing provision. In terms of revenue services, we have had the continued rollout of universal credit and there will be other elements and restrictions relative to welfare reform which continue to roll out over the coming year. And in customer services, as indicated, we will continue to progress the channel shift through the digital participation, which indeed is required relative to welfare reform, and the development of online skills through our libraries. And the final point is in terms of the work which was carried out relative to the rehousing of the Syrian family arrivals and the acceptance of the council to resettle up to 40 people over the next 5 years on the basis of the Home Office scheme, and we have already settled 23 people. And I would mention our children's services colleagues are also making separate provision in terms of unaccompanied children into Midlothian. I'm happy to pause for questions, Chair.
Any questions or comments for Kevin? Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. Can I ask through the Chair, what are we doing in regard to those tenants who have been capped by the benefit cap? Are we identifying them and talking to them, or are they coming forward to us and asking for help? What's the situation with those people, please?
Kevin, actually, if I could, just before you start, because I also have a question and I'm keen just to get an overall picture of it as well. And it was just similarly on the cap, but also on the kind of whole welfare reform issue, because I know that it was talked about lots in the last term, and particularly for new councillors, it would be good to know what overall is going on there, particularly in terms of the welfare reform working group. Have we got a date set up for new members to participate, and just any other information, because I am really concerned about that, and I know it's hinted at in the report as well around the long-term risks to our housing supply as well. So it'd be good to get a kind of general overview, particularly for new members.
Certainly, thank you. It's been practice, as you mentioned, Chair, to bring forward a report on an annual basis to Council in terms of welfare reform as it's progressed and the impact indeed it's having to claimants in Midlothian, and also detailing the mitigation actions that we and a range of partners are doing too. So certainly to propose that we probably do that after recess in terms of giving a more comprehensive report back to members. But certainly to answer Councillor's question, in terms of the benefit cap, which was a further phase was implemented last November, that impacted initially. There was 34 households who were going to be impacted because we'd scoped out, clearly working with DWP, the households who would be affected by that, and largely we replicated the first effort that we'd done in respect of welfare reform implementation. So again, there were colleagues in children's services, education, housing, revenues. We really mapped out which services were engaged in a household, because that was the more accepted avenue to get in there in terms of, as you indicate, what are the opportunities to mitigate there. So largely we did that through discretionary housing payment. We were also clearly having mitigation in terms of the bedroom tax. They were also looking at opportunities clearly in terms of employment, because one of the ethos of welfare reform is to have people engaged in work in terms of increasing employment too. So there were a range really of factors that were taken into account specific to the household. But as I say, I can come back with a more detailed response relative to a more comprehensive report. Relative to the current position of universal credit, we are... We had that implemented from April, and already over those 3 months we have certainly seen a significant rise in the number of claimants affected by universal credit than we did in the whole previous year under the different arrangement between live universal credit and full universal credit, and that is impacting on our income stream, as was anticipated, and certainly as has been the practice with our neighbours at East Lothian, who saw a fivefold increase in their rent arrears over the period of 12 months. And as is indicated, that can ultimately impact on our borrowing requirement and our provision for social rented housing development in the future at its worst. But as I say, I'll bring forward a more comprehensive report in the after recess.
Thank you. That was very comprehensive. Thanks.
Thank you, Kevin. That was a really good, if not a concerning reply. If there's no other questions or comments, we'll move on to the Children's Service Performance Report. Joan Schnitt.
Okay, so for Children's Services, we've been going through a review and completed the review on 31st of March. The new service is not a locality-based service, but created through a desire to transform how we currently work with children and their families to achieve greater efficiency both in working practice and the use of resources. And basically that means that, you know, going forward in these financial difficult times, what we need to look at is the voluntary agency and our partner agencies as we go forward, so as to make sure that we're not duplicating any of the work that we're doing with families. We front-loaded the service so that we have greater capacity to deal with referrals at the first point of contact, in the hope that we can stop situations escalating, which ultimately mean in both intrusive and expensive forms of intervention, which isn't ideal for any family as we go forward. The children's services have also all moved to Esdale Court, which has been a huge upheaval for them in addition to the service review. However, they moved there 3 weeks ago and are slowly managing to get into there. Once we get settled there, then people are more than welcome to come and visit. It's a good opportunity for people to engage and work more effectively together. And there's also some hot desking for external agencies to come and work alongside us. In relation to particular teams, the family placement team, over the past year we've increased our current foster care numbers from 56 up to 63. I would like to highlight that this is an ongoing campaign that we hold in relation to trying to recruit foster carers within Midlothian. It's a very, very challenging area of work. We have a lot of big private companies that come in and take our foster carers with them. Higher fees and respite, etc., things that as a small local authority that we're unable to offer. And also there's some ethical debates in there around how they perform as well. However, what I will say going forward is that we've been approached by Edinburgh and other neighbouring local authorities to look at a much bigger service, because we're not the only local authority that's struggling to maintain foster carers. So that's a piece of work that's just been started, and I'll be able to update members as we go forward in relation to how we can take that forward. We also have a new kinship care strategy, which has been a big piece of work in relation to the last year, and I meet with the kinship carer group on a twice yearly basis to ensure that we are supporting them. These are committed parents, grandparents, etc., that look after our young people, most vulnerable young people within our society, and we need to make sure that we're supporting them as best we can in relation to not just payment but also their learning and development as they go forward. In relation to child protection, our numbers, as you will find out as we report throughout the year, fluctuate between 40-50, which is just above the national average. However, we also have huge families that come into Midlothian, so it can only be two families that can put us above the national average as we go forward. But I suppose what is worth noting is that child protection referrals coming into the organisation have increased by 39% over the last year, and that takes them up to 507 for the last year. That is in comparison to 4,500 referrals that came into the service alone. So it's a small number, but obviously it's very, very intensive work and going forward. The looked after at home children and the looked after away from home, so our care experienced young people's group. For those of you that may know, Scottish Government published education attainment or looked after population just this morning. The embargo was lifted at 9:30. It doesn't tell us anything that we don't already know. Children who are in foster care perform better than children who are in residential placements. So again, that needs to be a big focus on us ensuring that we get foster carers for these children that are 14, 15, up to the age of 21, which is where we have a duty to care for children now with the new Act. And also children who have fewer placement moves obviously perform better as well. These aren't the new things, but obviously it's going forward that will be in our plan to make sure that we strive to meet these new targets. Our looked after population in relation to away from home, so children who do not live with their parents, is decreasing. Grace talked earlier about a Midlothian child being a Midlothian child. There's been a huge push on that for the last 5 years, actually, and we're starting to see a decline in the amount of children that we place out with the local authority, and certainly that is a drive going forward. But what we do need to still get built in is infrastructure within Midlothian to manage these young children, because some of them, with the best intentions, cannot go straight back into mainstream school, etc. So we're working very closely with education to ensure that we can support them going forward. Hawthorne Children's Centre, I've already touched on this morning. And our residential services, we have three residential houses at this moment in time. And we, again, the numbers fluctuate on a daily basis depending on the need of and the demand that comes into the service. But overall, it's been a fairly successful year, I would say, in relation to going forward and maintaining young people within these houses and not moving them on. Currently, as we speak, we have two young people in secure care, which again is another big focus of the work that we continue to do. You can see from the report that Christmas time we tried using restriction orders, which is a tag by another name, and we're one of the few local authorities in Scotland that have used that within children's services. It was fairly successful over Christmas time. I think longer term we need some more analysis as to whether that's the way forward. So, and amongst all that, we obviously have our challenges, as I've already made comment to, increasing referrals. Year on year, the referrals increase coming into children's services. What we have prevented is them escalating to stage three. We've seen a huge reduction in that. However, it's still a challenge in relation to going forward. Finance, as it is with every area within the council. The Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry, that is a hugely growing area of work, and we've just submitted our first Section 21 form back to the inquiry team, and we're now working on the second request that we've had in. And I just want to make people aware of the huge amount of work that this has taken up at this moment in time. We have a very dedicated workforce at this moment in time who are very competent and professional in their job. However, as each week goes by, people will see from the updates from the Abuse Inquiry that we're being, you know, all local authorities are being asked for more information. So, it's just to make people mindful of that going forward. Mental health is another challenge, and I chair a group this afternoon actually in relation to how we can get a better mental health resources within Midlothian. CAMHS seems to be the only, you know, the only name that people hear in relation to where we can refer, but there's lots of agencies and resources within Midlothian. And what we need to make sure is that people get access to them at the right time in order to prevent situations escalating and people needing to be referred into CAMHS. And that's everything. Happy to take any questions.
Councillor Johnson.
I wonder, the performance of kinship care children at school, how well are they doing at school? I wasn't sure if they were included in that little section you talked about, looked after at home and looked after away from home.
Not all kinship care will come under that category, depending, because some kinship care arrangements are informal, in which case we have very little involvement. And then obviously we had the old Section 11, or now the kinship care order, in which case they don't remain looked after, and quite rightly so, although they still get the funding and support if needed. That wouldn't be a true reflection of all kinship care children. But I think it's fair to say that those that we do know, who we're involved in, because we're normally involved at the placing of a child at the very beginning, their outcomes sit along looked after at home, which is another area where we need to do a huge amount of work in relation to promoting their educational needs.
Okay, do we need to do? I just think if it was me looking after my grandchildren, it's a long time since I've had any modern input into children doing their homework and stuff. So is that a case of actually helping the grandparents or the kinship carers too?
Yeah, as you know, we have kinship care groups within Midlothian, and they're very active kinship care groups. And you know, the best way of learning is from peers. You know, it's not a social worker coming in and teaching, or a teacher actually. But what we do have is, you know, if there's an allocated worker or someone within school that needs to support them, then obviously they would do that. But my experience is that the kinship care groups are the best people to support them in that. And you know, they are very active and prominent within Midlothian.
Councillor Smith.
Yes, just seeking information. The total number of referrals into children's services at 4,764 for place the size of Midlothian sounds like a very high proportion of our children at school end up being referred to the service. Is there something you can say about the composition of that number and to what degree it reflects quite low-touch interventions? Are we out of kilter on that number with other Scottish local authorities?
There's not a huge amount of data to say. Our systems don't allow us to tell us exactly what tariff every referral, because some referrals come in and you know you can close it down 2 weeks later and then it'll come back because there's been a police incident. It's really, really difficult to analyse the data. I would have to say at that level, there's probably 1,000 open cases within Midlothian at this moment in time. So you've got 4,500 referrals coming in. That shows you that a huge amount of them will be signposted somewhere else or will be a very short piece of intervention. And then they can be closed down or, you know, referred back to school or nursery and things like that. At this moment in time, obviously, we don't have the named person. And I would hope that with the introduction of the named person, that the referrals would decrease because people, you know, the named person would then have responsibility in relation to looking at that information and deciding whether it needed to come here. At the moment, we are the route where everything comes. So, you know, going forward, we would hope that we would be able to manage that a wee bit better going forward. We would obviously support our education and health colleagues with the named person implementation anyway. But sorry, yeah, but I can't give you that exact data going forward.
Councillor Montgomery.
Thanks. I was going to ask the same question, really. It does seem a real high number. What constitutes a referral? I mean, just because, you know, given the numbers, I mean, I would think there'll be a whole range of what a referral would mean. You know, so could you maybe give us an idea what, not a serious referral, but has to be looked at, and what would be a more serious one?
mean, clearly the child protection ones are the easiest. You know, we all know what the child protection is, so that gets logged. But, you know, a referral can be from anybody, from any agency, from a member of the public, can be from a parent themselves wanting parenting support work. So it ranges from the very, very earliest form intervention, as in a health officer phoning up saying, you know, I'm really worried about this mum, she's needing parenting support work. And because that comes into our service, it does get logged as a referral. I suppose because what research has told us about the past, that if we don't start logging it and then something escalates and we don't have a chronology of where this event initially started, you know, and if we had intervened earlier, could we have prevented situations escalating? So, yeah, I mean, it's very wide and varied. A vast majority of referrals come from Police Scotland. You know, because, you know, we now have this, that wherever they attend a house, even if it's an adult-only situation, if there's children within a house, then we must be informed. And there's good reason for that, obviously, because significant case reviews tell us that we've missed opportunities in the past. So a large percentage do come from Police Scotland. And again, once the named person comes into play, these lower tariff referrals will not come into children's services. They will be dealt with by education and health as a much lower point of contact.
Thanks. And moving on to communities and economy before we lose any more councillors. Sorry, don't take it personally, Ian.
It's okay. I'll just give a brief overview anyway, because it's a fairly extensive report. As this is the first meeting of the new committee, I just summarised at the top of the page the sort of core aims and responsibilities for the Communities and Economy Service, which is covers a fairly wide range of areas. And you'll see that in just in terms of the presentation here. Rather than reporting by individual services, I've grouped it together under four key headings, which is overall strategy, serving communities, economic development, and service development and improvement, which I think reflects it better. I mean, all six of the teams involved in the service are involved in one way or another, to a greater or lesser extent, in trying to drive forward those progress on those items. Just to perhaps highlight a few areas then. One is the importance of up-to-date development plans. So the development plan, strategic development plan for Edinburgh South East Scotland, of which Midlothian is a part, and also the local development plan. Those plans are critical in terms of if the council is going to meet housing need or seek to, if it's going to promote economic development most effectively, and if it's going to have a clear strategy for environmental protection and sustainability. Up-to-date development plans are critically important. Glad to say that is the case in Midlothian. The other thing I want to mention was performance of the statutory regulatory development functions. There are four within this service: planning, building standards, environmental health, and trading standards. And the significance of those is that they're all statutory services. Performance needs to be high, because if it's not, then areas like public safety start to suffer. Confidence of the population in terms of what its council's doing for it in terms of protection suffers, and reputation suffers. And just to give you a case in point, if the planning and building standards services are beginning to fail, it doesn't hit the headlines. It's not like a food scare or a big problem of that nature. But what happens is that the council then starts to become, in developers' minds, an area where it's difficult to develop. It's difficult for investors to come in. So the importance of performance in the regulatory services is critical. I'm glad to say, in terms of the regulatory services here, the standard of performance is high. And there's every expectation it continued to be so, but we're not complacent on that. Just another area of key interest now will be broadly the services to communities. And the impact of the Community Empowerment Act 2015 cannot be overstated. So in areas like asset transfer, in areas like participatory budgeting, it becomes important. But the most significant thing, if you link it to the issues related to the reductions or the pressures on the council budgets, is that moving from a rather more paternalistic approach to a more enabling role is critical for councils. And building up the capacity of communities to be partners in delivery of service becomes absolutely essential. Now, there's a long journey to go in relation to that, but it becomes a critical part of the way in which councils need to operate over the next few years. Just a word on economic development. Then the work of the Business Gateway team continues because the lifeblood of our economy is the small and medium-sized enterprises. In fact, those employing fewer than 50 or even those employing fewer than 20 people. And they're critically important to the economy. There is continued EU funding pretty much guaranteed with the existing programmes to 2020. So for things like the LEADER programme, which is a £3.4 million programme over 5 years to 2020 to serve rural projects in East and Midlothian is really significant, and we're seeing some significant benefits in terms of projects coming forward for Midlothian. Borders Rail, maximising the impact of that. A number of members were obviously at the Borders Rail induction session, which Sam Smith and I did yesterday. So I won't dwell on that. But also town centre improvements, which is a critical part of economic development. If you've got town centres that look the part, they really make a difference. So we've seen the improvements at Dalkeith. There's the current improvements at Gore Bridge. And then starting next year, all being well, we've secured money for a five-year programme for Penicuik. Maybe just to touch on the challenges, Chair. The big one is infrastructure to be able to accommodate the scale and the rapidity of the housing growth in Midlothian. And that's the big issue. And it's the big issue for communities as well, as we keep being told. Community Empowerment Act, implementing that is critical. Securing a city deal would be excellent. Mitigating the impact of welfare reform, because within my services, the welfare rights team, and they work on a case-by-case basis with individuals and families who are needing to be given advice to ensure that they can ensure they get the welfare benefits they're entitled to. And as you heard Kevin mention just earlier, with the introduction of universal credit, it is quite demanding for very many people who are quite vulnerable and quite disadvantaged. And the welfare rights team have a critical role to play in that, along with the CABs as well. And some individual items just to cover, just to show the range of things we do. The gas ingress issue at Gore Bridge is still ongoing. So we had Newbiles Crescent, and we all know what the outcome of that was. We're obviously doing monitoring at Newbiles Avenue, and that's an ongoing situation. East of Bush, which is the critically important and most significant employment area, not to belittle any of the others, but it probably is the fastest growing and most significant employment area in Midlothian. We have an issue with strategic road access to that area, which could stop it in its tracks, and that's something we're needing to work on very well, very closely. And finally, although certainly not least, out-of-control dogs. Dog fouling has been obviously the issue which has sort of bedeviled councils for years, but the issue is not so much that, although that's still important, it's out-of-control dogs. The incidence of out-of-control dogs is really rising quickly. That's dogs attacking other animals, horses in particular. It's dogs attacking individual members of the public. And also a new issue which we're getting told by the farmers, irresponsible commercial dog walkers releasing packs of dogs onto farmland and causing havoc. So maybe a specific issue, but one that's going to certainly capture the public imagination and interest, I would have thought. Chair, that's just a range of things which I wanted to cover. More than happy to pick up on any points that members want to.
Thanks, Ian. No points to note. Okay. Sorry, Councillor Montgomery, sorry.
Hi. Ian, could you maybe go on the commercial dog walking? I mean, I've got a dog, and I mean, and there are a number of people actually, you know, you see them going around with, I don't know if you want to describe it as a pack of dogs. Do these people need to be licensed? Or can anybody just do it? Because I think that's maybe something that not just Midlothian Council should maybe look at more on a kind of national basis. Because it is quite intimidating if, you know, if you've got your own dog, or even if it's just an individual out walking, and there's four or five dogs running about, you know, ostensibly out of control, although they're not necessarily just as bad as that. But, I mean, it's no clever. And I wasn't sure if they're licensed or no, but you're shaking your head, so...
There's no legal framework for licensing of commercial dog walkers, probably because it's something which maybe is an industry that's grown up perhaps, you know, only in the last few years to any scale. What some councils are doing is looking to introduce voluntary schemes, so you could then register with the council, your own council, as somebody who can be registered on a voluntary basis and therefore adheres to a code of conduct that the authority would put forward. And obviously there was a recent report went up to Cabinet just for them to consider the introduction of a scheme here, which is obviously still an ongoing matter, which they decided to continue for further consideration. But a number of councils, including neighbouring councils, do have schemes. I don't know how effective they are, but I think probably what we're going to be seeing is that depending upon how effective they are and how much more, how many more of this industry grows, as to whether at some point it will get into the national legislative programme. Because certainly at the farmers' meeting back in February, we have an annual farmers' meeting, Millennium Farmers' meeting, it was one of the biggest issues that they raised. And it's just damage to crops, but particularly damage to livestock. In some cases, somebody would arrive with a van at a gate, an agricultural gate of a field, and as many as 15 or 16 dogs would simply be let off the leash to run wild across the farmland. That they'd actually seen that with their own eyes.
Councillor Johnson? No. Okay, moving on to finance and... No, sorry, commercial operations. Sorry.
Thanks, Chair. I'll touch on, as each of my colleagues has done, some of the things that we've been involved in over the last year, and then finish with some of the challenges, touching on kind of some of the things for new members, just to give them an appreciation of what we've been up to. One of the themes that will be evident throughout this report is the green agenda about reducing carbon emissions and drive in that general direction. So in that regard, waste management is the first one that I'd highlight. We, with the City of Edinburgh Council, have got a partnership arrangement which has seen us deliver a food waste plant down at Miller Hill. So that now takes food waste from both Edinburgh and ourselves, turns it into a fertiliser and also generates electricity. The second part of that project is the residual waste plant. So that's all the material that goes in your grey bin, and that will be delivered during the late 2019 when that plant is fully commissioned. So essentially that will mean that we will meet our landfill requirements, i.e. no more than 5% of our waste would go to landfill. You'll see there that there are Scottish Government targets for recycling, and during 2016 we recycled just over 53% of our waste stream. So heading in the right direction in terms of no more than 70% by 2025. In terms of road services, not so much about recycling or whatever. It's about the road network, and it's about the condition of the network. Without a good network, then very much of what each of my colleagues have touched on makes it difficult. And it's that vision of a great place to grow. What we've been able to do is maintain the condition of the network across Midlothian, where just over 30% of the network requires to be considered for maintenance at any time. So yes, you'll see potholes, yes, you'll see cracking, but we've managed to maintain that over the last 5 or 6 years. But touching back on the green agenda, we in Midlothian were one of the first authorities to invest in LED lighting, which has great benefits in terms of it reduces our carbon emissions, but it also reduces our energy consumption. And some 25% of our lights are now LED. I think it's worth highlighting the revised active travel strategy and some of the good work that's been done in Midlothian, and that's about getting people walking and cycling, particularly in linking it into the new Borders Rail line. So it's about how we get to and from the new Borders Rail stations, but it's also looking at co-authority links. And just last week, we actually were recognised on the Scottish stage where the work that we've done up to now in that regard won an award at the Scottish Transport Awards. So that was recognised. Members should be aware that we're working towards decriminalised parking, the introduction of that, and that's likely subject to Scottish Government approval to take place towards the end of this year. Just briefly mentioning the work in the Travel and Fleet team, we've invested significantly in electric vehicles. We've got another two coming along, and it's also about reducing the grey fleet mileage and our carbon emissions in that regard. In terms of our land services, quite a diverse service. There's been a number of projects that have been delivered across Midlothian, and that's all about two things. One, it's about enhancing the environment, but secondly, it's about bringing features into our parks that allow people to take an active part in play, and that includes disabled groups, and that's all part of our active play strategy. But similarly, probably a great amount of work has been carried out in land services in particular in terms of giving positive destinations for our young people. There's a highly active team led by the Ranger Service that brings in people and gives them all sorts of experience across there. And obviously I've highlighted the fact that that's over 12,000 hours of placement during the year. So it's a great range of things and youngsters that have been brought in there. In terms of some of the emerging challenges, we've got Pennycook Recycling Centre, which has been granted planning consent to take that forward, but that's something that will need to come back to council for due consideration because there is a cost involved in doing that. The council signed up to the Scottish Government Household Waste Charter, and that's about recycling to greater levels. But there is a challenge there because there is a substantial cost involved if we were to further separate our waste streams. But again, that will be a decision for council to take. We've attended seminars lately where Zero Waste Scotland have highlighted a revised litter code of practice that's due to be introduced, and that would be towards the end of this year. And again, that's going to place higher standards of litter prevention and collection in relation to the council. We have recently had a detailed audit of the council's fleet operation carried out by the Freight Transport Association. So that was looking at the operating licence. We have over 60 heavy goods vehicles, and it's about how we provide that service. And that was quite a positive audit. The next step is an audit of our maintenance function, and that's due to be carried out very shortly. Just touch on one of the very last things, and that's some of the work that we've been doing to introduce and increase our income streams. We've done that through our land services in particular, targeting hard and soft landscape projects. So not only do we carry out a number of projects across Midlothian for private sector operators, we're now looking at developing that team and actually looking at work streams in Scottish Borders area, for example. So it's about bringing that income and it's about protecting jobs across the authority. So I'll pause at that point, Chair, and happy to take any questions.
Thanks. Any questions for Ricky or his team? Councillor Snell.
Just very quickly, you very helpfully responded to a ward member inquiry indicating we were about to have a new pothole mending machine that would be better, faster and more effective. Have we received that yet, and is it performing well?
Yes, it's now in operation, and one of the tasks of each of our four roads inspectors is to actually monitor that, and the feedback that I'm getting is that it is a more effective repair and it's got a longer life, so it is doing what it says in the tin effectively.
Superb. Potholes are a nuisance to us all. Moving on to finance and integrated service support. Is that... Okay. Perfect timing, Gary. I'll just let Gary get his papers and stuff. In the meantime, if we just move on to a property and facilities report, and then we'll come back to finance if everybody's like-minded. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Similar to Ricky, I'll just go through the strategic delivery points and then on to the challenges and take questions thereafter. Within facility services, in the past year, we've seen catering continue to perform well above the national average, particularly in the primary school uptake and the primary 1-3 free meal uptake. There's a particular challenge around the high school meals, and that is giving us some concern just to try and maintain the numbers in that service. PPP contract and the structural survey that was put under question by the failure in one of the Edinburgh schools led to quite a lot of activity in and around the estate. And we didn't just keep that within the PPP estate, but we spread that through the whole of the council estate, and we demonstrated that there was structural integrity for all of our facilities. We reported that back to the Scottish Government and various other agencies that were interested as well. Facility services have been looking to extend their contracts out with the council, similar to what Ricky's services are doing, and we have been successful in gaining contracts for cleaning and caretaking services with Melville Housing and a cleaning contract with Rise Trampoline Park up at Mayfield. Within property assets, the carbon reduction measures that we've been trying to achieve, which has a knock-on effect of reducing the carbon levy that we get charged with, we've been using CEEF funding, or the Central Energy Efficiency Fund, and this year we've managed to put £180,000 worth of funds against identified measures to reduce our carbon footprint. As Ian touched on, the town centre consultations are ongoing and getting a wee bit more widespread, and through the Borders Rail Champions we have now secured consultants to look at Newton Grange and Mayfield, and that should lead on to some consultations later in this year. Within sport and leisure, we've been looking at examples of diversity and trying to get inclusion for as many different participatory groups or individuals as possible, and the report there just goes into quite the list that we have, but we've also added to that with the David Dunn Fitness Trail, which is open to all in the Bonnyrigg King George V Park. We have through a council initiative looked at free swimming for all school children during holiday periods, and that's been immensely popular. To address the budget, we looked at the new and increased fee scale. Now, we did think that would have an impact on the footfall within the service. However, so far we've actually seen that hasn't affected the service, and we've not seen any major disruption to that. In building services, I'm pleased to say that we still are achieving 100% of our housing stock, meeting the Scottish House quality standards. We do have some exemptions in there, which if we cannot gain entry for upgrading works, we are obviously allowed to record as exemptions. Energy efficiency projects. Since 2011, we've managed to secure £5.6 million worth to deliver those projects, and that continues on. And indeed, this year, we've managed to achieve £1.157 million for the external wall insulation scheme. And that's now moved from Mayfield Lone Head into the Pennycook area. Project construction, and I think in the induction presentations we gave you, I highlighted we were currently looking at £250 million worth of capital projects. Well, I'm pleased to say again that the housing programme continues, and we've successfully completed projects at Edgefield Road and Poulton Street, and we're continuing on to phase three of the council housing programme. New Battle High School continues to be on programme and on budget, and still has a projected opening of May next year. And through the year, we've managed to complete Gorebridge, Bilston Primary Schools, and indeed Roslyn very recently, and Paradise should open in August this year as well. In terms of challenges, the government's food policy has given us a particular challenge, because the menus will have to adjust to look at sugar levels and what we can provide within that. We try very hard to make sure there's a nutritional balance to all of our menus, but of course when you get to high school, there's a greater freedom of choice, and unfortunately some of the pupils tend to go off to the high street as opposed to staying in the school. So we do have a particular challenge to keep the children in there and use our service. When we're tendering for new contracts, whilst we've been successful, we're really trying to emphasise quality rather than price, because we have increased the low pay within the council, rightly so, and that has made our pricing structure slightly higher than the competition. But if we emphasise the quality, we're hopeful that we'll still see success in the tendering field. In property assets, we are going through a re-rating of the estate, and that's to make sure that we do not hit any excessive or inflated rates bills that can creep in if you do not continue to keep on top of that exercise. Sport and leisure, we are currently going through the tendering and evaluation of the new ledger management system. We've got an outdated, unfit-for-purpose software system there just now, which really isn't helping getting bookings. We don't have an online booking system, for example, so that will help hopefully get participation, and that will give us the data to make sure we're focusing our energies in the right places. The business case for Destination Hill End is coming to a conclusion now, and we're hoping in the autumn to present that to council and looking at something that will create a year-round model which will boost the finances of the council. Midlothian Active Choices is the preventative service that we work with the NHS to avoid excessive prescriptive medicines or indeed treatments, but the funding for that is very, very small. We hit about three times the number of participants than we really can afford. And securing that funding is a major challenge for us if we want to see that continue. Personal belief is that we should see that continue, because I think it avoids excessive bills elsewhere, but it's a challenge that we're going to have to address through this coming year. And then finally, in building services, the number of major projects that we have ahead of us is a major challenge. Obviously, we've got a limited capital budget, but we've also got a rising market of costs and indeed labour shortage, so a challenge ahead of us regardless of how many projects we take on. I'll pause and take questions there.
Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. Just one question on page 288. Do you mean Gore Glen Primary School rather than Gorebridge Primary School?
Yeah, it's good.
Sorry, thank you. Yeah. And well, the questions I had were the external wall insulation. Have we had our buildings checked to make sure that we will not have an accident like the one in London? And the other question I had is what input and contribution to the Gorebridge Beacon is the council having after the fire?
The external wall insulation tragic events down in London, there's a particular style of insulation that's been used there. It's a composite cladding system that goes on the outside of the wall, and that created the channel in which the flames rose very quickly. All insulation is flammable, unfortunately. Some of them are more flammable than others, and the accelerant that creates with the void that it's created up the outside of the building just made it just travel so particularly fast. Now, we've checked out, first of all, we don't have any high-rise buildings, so we're in a slightly different scenario, but we've checked out the composition of the external wall insulation we've been putting on our housing, and that's a completely different system. It's a set of boards that go on the housing, and that's covered with a wet dash render, and that has different fire-resistant qualities, so it's of lesser risk there. It doesn't create that channel that was down in Grenfell Tower. We are currently checking out the cladding systems that we put on our schools, but they're rain screen cladding, and the insulation is actually further inside the building. So we don't believe that we are in the same position, but we are going through that exercise as we speak. In terms of Gorebridge Beacon, again, unfortunate situations where a third party set fire to that building and has created extensive damage in there. We are actively supporting the Gorebridge Trust albeit we do not have remit to go in and step into their shoes, but we'll give them that support to give them the opportunity to rebuild what's been damaged within the centre through insurance, contractual disputes that we'll have with the contractor, getting them re-engaged and design work that goes with that.
Councillor Russell. Sorry, did you want to ask a question?
It's page 294. It's regarding the Dalkey Town Centre regeneration. You obviously know I've banged on about this for quite a considerable time. Are we nearing anything coming to this new council? I've been given an August council. I'm not sure if that's correct. Could you confirm?
Yeah, we are now very, very close to that, Margot. So I'm pleased to say that we're aiming to just get that just after recess back to this council. I think we'll probably bring that to a seminar rather than the council straight away. So depending on the timing of coming back after the summer break, we'll aim to put that in front of members as soon as possible.
So, with your obligation, so we're obviously looking at delaying it again for third year, I think we're kind of into now. I'm very disappointed that it's going to be held back again. I understand the idea of a seminar, given that there's new members, but I did point that out to you way back at the beginning of the year, that it was something that we should have brought forward a bit quicker. So I obviously want to register my disappointment.
Noted. Last item, finance and great support, please, Gary. And if we could make it brief, because I'm aware that we are now running 1 hour and 10 minutes over. Thank you.
Afternoon. Yeah, I'll be as brief as I can. So, focus of the service is a set out in the paper, and I suppose that it's, and I make no apologies for harping on about these things when I come in front of committee. Our people strategy, investing in our workforce and driving the productivity and flexibility through that. Delivering excellence, transforming council services, and I think I will harp on about the financial strategy and financial sustainability. Across the rest of the service, we have other key strategies that are designed to drive change through the service. The biggest thing we achieved last financial year was the investing in our workforce, the review of pay and grading. We've changed the pay structure, the terms and conditions through a collective agreement. We've implemented a new set of people management policies to help manage our biggest asset, our workforce. We're now in the key part of the project, however, which is actually deriving the benefits from that across services as we transform services. I'll bring a report to the full council on the 27th of June on the financial strategy, so I won't labour any of the aspects of that. Needless to say, it presents a significant financial challenge for council. Alongside that financial strategy is the need, and Gary touched on a little bit there, the investment in our asset base. The part that I'm principally responsible for is our digital assets, so making sure that our investment in school technology, etc., meets the learning, teaching, sort of the digital learning strategy needs and the needs of the emerging learning strategies. And so that presents a challenge in terms of affordability. The other key aspect around digital is maintaining cyber resilience, and your members will be aware of the impact of recent events on NHS. In terms of procurement, as well as paying our own staff, increased wages, we secured living wage accreditation at the start of the financial year, so we are a Scottish living wage accredited employer. The challenges, the financial position of the council and the financial outlook, and that will be outlined next week. Delivering change in our workforce and our service provision, both within my own services and across the council, and in continuing to keep security and sustainability of our digital estate and really driving the changes from that. Key issue for members to be aware of as we go into the next financial year is the new GDPR regulations. Despite Brexit, those regulations still come into force, and it places a number of burdens on the council that we need to prepare for and put in place. I think I would stop there and take any questions, if I may.
Any questions or comments for Gary at this stage? Do you want to carry on further, Gary, or is that your summary complete?
No, there's not much more I need to say, conscious of time.
Okay. The one thing that I would like to add is I'd like to apologise to people who had this in their calendars either for an hour or an hour and a half. It's quite clear from the agenda that we would never have got through that in an hour and a half. And I know that people have other work commitments, caring commitments, meetings with their constituents, and I will ask the clerk that we make sure that there's appropriate time, because this scrutiny committee is really important, and I feel like there's members that aren't here now that perhaps would have liked to scrutinise the work further. So I'll apologise for the missed diary and make sure that the next committee has sufficient time to consider the business. Thank you. Meeting complete.